Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Well, hello there, you magnificent bastards. You have found another episode of the Video Nasty Project, the show that takes you on an expedition into the deepest, darkest jungles of horror movie exploitation and disgusting cinema. Or, in this case, as viewed through the lens of an Italian exploitation filmmaker, Antonio Margheriti. Because tonight we're going to be watching The Last Hunter, a pretty shameless Rambo slash missing in action sort of flick. Why don't you take a peek at the trailer, and we'll be back as soon as we can.
Listen, I've got a top priority mission, so you get this fucking thing down!
I don't give a shit about top priority.
Change your mind? No!
Who's she?
I'm a foreign correspondent. My name is Jane Foster.
Watch where you put your feet now, honey. There's VCs under every rock.
Avento!
Oh, we're never gonna get the hell out of here. Never, ever.
We will. We have to.
This is your bloody mission. Get off! Your mission?
Fuck you!
You hate the VCs.
Don't have time to hate them. I kill them. I don't want to argue about it anymore. Don't want to think about it anymore, understand it anymore. Them to think I don't want to live anymore.
Even Charlie knows you have a mission behind their lines.
So what the fuck is it they've set you up to get yourself killed for?
Harry!
How long have you been here?
Huh? It doesn't matter anymore.
Why'd you get chewed up like that?
Them. Huh? Them, they come in here by the hundreds.
Jesus Christ. Get out of here.
It's very difficult. Especially when I watched Steve blow his brains out because you went and ditched him for your cause. But I'm here because they gave me an order and because I obey when I get issued orders.
You're a lying son of a bitch!
Come on, you must have known it would come to that.
If you feel on trial, I can't help you.
Alright, kids, that was the trailer to The Last Hunter, starring David Warbeck and Tia Farrow. So the movie is essentially, well, you know how Italy absolutely loves their ripping off of American movies? Mm. Hey, Mad Max is big and popular. Let's rip off Mad Max 100 times. Or Escape from New York. Or, God, the zombie movies. So this is essentially The Deer Hunter and Apocalypse Now and The A-Team as seen through an Italian lens.
There's actually a solid story to this film.
It's not a very deep story.
No.
It's kind of very linear, but it is there.
The guy took advantage of being able to shoot on much of the same locations that Apocalypse Now shot on. There's elements, not necessarily of the story, but the characters that are in Apocalypse Now are in this film.
Okay, quick plug for Machete Maidens Unleashed, the documentary about all the movies that they shot in the Philippines. Roger Corman doing the Big Bird Cage and movies like this and Apocalypse Now. And basically it's this look at all the genre and the crazy loosey-goosey OSHA. What's that? We don't care about OSHA. And this movie fits in exactly with those sort of movies.
Yeah, that was a good thing to bring up. I had completely kind of like forgotten that documentary. Now I want to watch it again.
And so David Warbeck is playing Captain Harry, and the movie opens in this brothel in Saigon in 1973, which is right at the end of the Vietnam War when everything was going crazy. And for the first 5 or 10 minutes or so, it's a bunch of GIs lying around fucking hookers, and they're smoking opium and basically losing their minds because, well, that's what you do when you're a broken, war-torn veteran in Vietnam.
It's just a lot of lounging about, and there's girls present. And there's one guy, specifically, who is having issues that are ramping up.
His girlfriend wound up leaving him. And there's David Warbeck is like the other part of the, well, it's not a love triangle. They don't actually are lovers, but they're friend triangles.
Yeah.
So you got David and Steve and the girl left Steve, and Steve is freaking out and losing his mind. And so he takes it very badly, and basically, straight out of The Deer Hunter, gun, revolver, blam, blows his head off. The one thing that I really liked about the opening bits was after Harry's friend kills himself, there's all of a sudden there's this rocket attack from the VC, I'm guessing, and all of a sudden there's explosions and the place is blowing up, and then we cut to the outside, and there's like this train yard and shipyard and loading cranes and stuff that are all blowing up. Yeah. And I thought it was, the miniatures were really, really well done.
I watched that segment a few times, and I don't believe it was... Yes, miniatures, but not miniatures.
No.
They were scaled down, but they were still big because there was the ratio of the because whenever you see really badly done, you see flames that are like, here's this little dinky car with a match and the flame off of a match. You can see that, oh my God. No, this was actually, the scaling was done really nicely because the flames fit the scale.
That's the problem whenever you do a miniature shot and you're involving water and you're involving fire. You can't scale those, and that's going to be your tell that your miniatures aren't that good. And it really worked here.
The scaling was just right so that I actually had to go back, play it through a second time, going, oh, those are miniatures.
And then Captain Harry, he winds up getting an assignment to go into the jungle out into Vietnam, and basically... You have Berlin Betty and Tokyo Rose up in the North Vietnam area, and she's broadcasting demoralizing messages to the troops. Lay down your weapons, go home, Yankee, your girls love you, they're back at home, that typical bullshit.
And Harry gets told, you're going to go on a mission and take out that transmitter, take out the operator, you know, go blow it up. And this is one of the moments where this segment gets underway, this is one of the first of the, oh, come on moments that I've been talking about. Where, why would they take a captain and send him solo on a mission like that? That's not how it would be. It'd be a team. It'd be a squad. But okay, no, I'll let it go.
You know, I'm not going to look to Italian exploitation movies for my dissertation on how military intelligence and operation should work.
Yeah.
as far as an action beat goes, I really liked the helicopter that was dropping off Harry, and like they're flying and like there's taking fire from the ground, and the dude's like, okay, we can't land here, you're gonna have to jump out over here. And so like he jumps out and there's explosions. It was a really well done shot.
One of the first of the Grody shots comes up here where the gun operator, the guy who's manning the machine gun, gets shot in the head.
What's even worse with that scene is when Warbeck goes over and it's like, oh my God, what happened to you? Pulls out the shrapnel from his eye and there's this fountain of blood coming out of the dude's eye. Little Grody.
Yeah.
And so Harry winds up hooking up with another batch of team that is in the jungle, unrelated to him. They're like escorting this...
It's a journalist, a photographer.
Yes, that'd be Tia Farrow.
Yeah.
And they've got to get to this base camp that's in the middle of the jungle. And so we get a little bit of jungle adventure where there's like punji pits and spike traps and basically your cannibal movie fair.
The whole scene, it was where there's something falls out of a tree and one of the guys loses it, just starts machine gunning into the treetops. And then one of the other guy, all the others fall in line. And the captain's like, what are you shooting at?
It's a little bit like Predator, except shit.
Yeah.
They get to the base camp, and that's where the movie, the wheels fall off for me a little bit, because it has this really weird mood shift. Okay, they're doing the typical Colonel Kurtz, Marlon Brando, I'm in the woods for 150 years and I've gone crazy sort of thing.
He's sort of a mix of Marlon Brando's character and Martin Sheen.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's sort of like they blended the two together where he's got he basically has his faculties. He's still an officer and whatnot. But he's also that, oh, I'm going to play my favorite music.
And it turns out that the music is a bunch of explosions and bombs and stuff. And it's this big ass, you know, your 4077th MASH speakers that are on post right next to the dude's head. I'm like, you're not right.
Basically, this analogy of like a bass drum to this one, you know, like 20 millimeter, I think he says 20 millimeter or whatever. And then you hear the gun, boom, boom, boom. And it's just like, okay, he's not all there.
And then we wind up running into a little bit of mood whiplash where, so Tia Farrow, the war reporter, she is this, well, she's a woman. And the men in the camp, in fact, are primates and can't control their libido. And they haven't seen a woman in like 150 years. So when she shows up, they're like, boing. And here comes the rapey. Fortunately, it doesn't actually go all the way through because the captain comes out of the caves and is like, what the fuck are you doing? Jenkins, go up there and get me a coconut. And then there's this wacky circus music as the lieutenant has to run through enemy fire, get himself a coconut, and bring it back to the camp. And that was really weird.
There is a reasoning behind it. Basically, the captain is basically like when the guys get out of hand and they break the rules, I'm taking it out on you.
That's the punishment. Go get me a coconut.
Yeah. And it really, that's the kind of presentation, but there's no follow through. He doesn't get back. He gets back and just kind of like, oh, I made it. I would get back and like, oh, I made it. You motherfuckers, don't do this to me. You guys are getting me into trouble. You're going to get me killed. Stop it. That's where I would have taken the scene, but...
So, it turns out Berlin Betty is the missing girlfriend for Steve that Captain Harry was having their friend thing.
You look at Carol's dialogue on the boat where she's talking about, yeah, the three of us, I helped you tear up and burn your draft cards. We all had this ideal, and you two changed, and you went off to war, whereas I held on to the ideals. Steve kills himself over the angst of her having left. Harry's now found her and like, oh God, she's the broadcaster, and ends up having to kill her.
And so they have their confrontation and Harry has to kill the girlfriend and he leaves and like gets Tia back to the helicopter so they can get away and fly back to safety. And he stays behind. And it doesn't really set up why he's staying behind. Okay, yeah, he rips off his dag tags and throws them away. Obviously, this is some sort of anti-war statement. But it doesn't really follow through. It doesn't really set up this scene. You kind of have to assume what the hell's going on with him.
His train of thought is, I don't have any reason to live. I'm done.
It doesn't really get into the mindset and doesn't build him up.
No.
Enough to pay off that punchline. Okay, yes, you and I came up with that thesis statement on our own, so obviously it's obvious enough to be there. I would have liked to have seen that theme developed a little more.
Yeah, no, very much so. For example, one of the, I think, you know, if you want to talk about what ifs, let's go at it with a what if. Let's rewind into the film where the captain is asleep and he has that dream where he's dreaming about being back in New York.
Oh,
the last time the three of them were together.
Basically setting up the friend triangle.
Yeah. He's on the radio and he's making contacting, you know, headquarters, whatever. And he looks up. Actually, he hasn't even started to talk on the radio yet. He's just getting set up and he's getting ready to. He starts the broadcast and then he sees the photo of himself, Steve, and the gal. And at which point he's like,
oh, fuck, I don't believe this.
Now, when they had that moment, because they actually did a brief moment of, they did the photo, then they did the quick flash to the flashback scene. They could have actually done more of the flashback that they hadn't shown before and actually had some dialogue between the three of them to really cement his perspective moving forward.
So trim a little bit of the crazy Colonel Kurtz in the middle of the movie and take that runtime and drop it in the end and build up things and flesh it out. Perfect movie. And unfortunately, this is not a perfect world.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of that. No more what ifs.
The one thing I really did like about the ending of the movie was, so Harry grabs Tia Farrow and gets her to the helicopter and gets her on, and she's like, come with him, and he's like, no, 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 and the helicopter starts taking off, and there's this long ending shot of the helicopter flying away, and here's Harry kneeling in the grass, and he yanks off his dog tags, and then all of a sudden, like, explosions go off around him. Big ass, four explosions of napalm, like you would see in war reel footage.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, how did David Warbeck not die? That was an impressive stunt.
The thought did occur to me, too. I was like, holy cow, he's right in the middle of that.
And that was my first instinct. I went back to the documentary, Machete Maidens. I'm like, okay, Philippines, no OSHA compliance. Holy shit, they almost just blew up David Warbeck. I'm betting.
Just the way things were done is just like, that had to hurt. Just in some of the scenes, and the way when the person fell, jumped off of, landed on, whatever. And it was just, there were moments where it was like, knowing how the Filipino stuntmen work, yeah, there are some lacerations and other things happening in this set.
Okay, I know. Let's gush a little bit about Tony the Pimp, who doesn't get nearly enough love. Bobby Rhodes.
Yes. The guy has a film, a screen presence.
Oh, God, yes.
I hate to say as though it's the third film I've ever seen him in. Demons 2, and then this. I know he's done other films, haven't seen them, but in all three of the instances that I've seen him in a film, screen presence. The guy knows how to work in front of the camera.
And it is essentially, he plays it very much like Mr. T plays Mr. T in everything he does. He basically plays Tony the Pimp, but in the jungle. So my headcanon says that's Tony the Pimp's third cousin twice removed, because that's what you do with those roles.
Yeah. Now, his counterpart, out of all of these other characters, we actually get a character building moment where there's talking about him being a ball player.
Well, there's a couple of moments, like after, I don't remember who it was, if it was Midnight got shot or something, but they were in the infirmary, the two, and they had this kind of dialogue, witty banter back and forth. It was a pretty decent character building moment between the two.
Yeah.
For supporting characters, that's unusual.
These two were built up enough so that when they died, you're invested in them and you're mad about it or sad about it or however you ended up feeling. Because when the first one died, I was like, oh, man.
Well, the whole boat death was, oh, my God. That was unfair.
It was totally unfair, especially since because he did a good ramp up of he's making it out. No, he's not.
Admittedly, it was a pretty shit plan. Hey, let's get in this boat and drift down the river to our target, completely exposed on both sides and in a really obvious target. Okay, back to the... It's not a dissertation on military intelligence and operations.
Yeah. I want to touch briefly on how the filmmaker claims, oh, I don't want to make a political Vietnam War film. I just want to make a fun one. Yet he managed to fit in little jabs throughout the film.
And then one massive haymaker at the very ending where it's like, war is hell, punches you in the face with a... out of nowhere.
Yeah. You're riffing off of Apocalypse Now, Deer Hunter. You're riffing off of that, but you're really exaggerating it. You're really playing up that, oh, look at the dumb Americans. There is a pointed dumb Americans going on. There really was. That's how I interpreted it. And it's like, oh, you're trying not, you don't want to make a political Vietnam War film, but you're going to shit on the Americans and by exaggerating their behavior in war. Really?
All right, well, that sounds pretty good then. I think we're gonna call that an evening. So, Ian, was the last hunter nasty?
Yes.
Okay, go on. Why?
Well, you have decomposing corpses that are, well... grody to the max.
And it was a reasonably well done prop. It looked like a pretty decent decaying corpse.
Yes, it did. Bullet hits, blood splatter.
The one scene that I was like, God, that was fucked up, was when Midnight was on the boat and like taking fire from the VC and like it's got set on fire and his leg was blown off and then like he died in the fire. I thought was actually pretty horrific. So
yeah.
If I were so inclined, that would be the scene I would flag it for.
If you go back a bit from the knee getting blown off and the fire, there's the compound fracture from when he landed in the boat.
Oh my God. Those are the sort of injuries on screen that will fuck me up. That's, if you want to talk the deep red, hey, we're going to come up with some deaths you can empathize with.
Yeah.
A compound fracture will do it to me 10 times out of 10.
Compound fractures are just always, always. I mean, every movie I've ever seen one in, it's just,
So when I watched this movie originally, I was like, okay, this is kind of brutal enough, I would put on the list. I think upon reflection and thinking about it, I would let it slide. But then you get scenes like that where it's like, oh, fuck me, no. So I think I'm going to let it go, but with a big asterisk next to it saying, compound fracture, fuck me.
It's got enough in it that it's just really kind of,
I am grateful, however, that we didn't have any animal snuff in this. When the snake showed up, I'm like, oh God, they're going to kill the snake and I'm going to hate the movie for the rest of the time. And no, it turns out the snake was not killed. So yay, go movie.
Well, aside from the snake, there was also the rats.
Which they were attacked because he was punching the water trying to drive them off, but none of them actually were killed.
Not on camera, no.
The problem is with that is if we start thinking about this in the high-level meta, we can't do that. We have to go with what's on screen.
I'm in the boat of let it go, with that emphasis of this is a...
So we're just going to let it go. Movie, you're free to go. Not seized. There you go. So, Ian, did you like The Last Hunter?
It's an okay film. It had for me a number of moments where I was like, oh, come on. I had a lot of oh, come on moments.
We'll put it this way. It is not Antonio Margheriti's best film. That would be probably... Take a Hard Ride or Cannibal Apocalypse. This is his middle tier stuff.
Yeah. This is a film that actually held my attention. I wasn't finding myself easily distracted. Like, there's something going on screen and, oh, Facebook. I mean, that wasn't happening. But it doesn't gel, like, oh, I wouldn't mind watching this again. Oh, I'd like to have a copy of this on the shelf. No. The movie starts really strong. For about the first half hour, it's really strong. And I'd say it has a pretty decent ending. It's just kind of the middle bit that's where they get to the camp with the guys in the cave. Mm. It's a little flabby there. I might have tightened that section up and gone with that.
You see, this is where this is a part of where I'm finding my like of the film falters. Not to the point of I don't like it. It just makes me, ah. And that is... behind the scenes, he's like, oh, I don't want to make a political Vietnam War film. I just want to make a fun one. There's a lot of political stuff in this. There's a lot.
Yeah. Aside from that, I enjoyed it. You enjoyed it to a point. Your mileage may vary. What you going to do?
Yeah. If I was channel surfing and it came up, I'll pass the time with this. I'd leave it playing.
So really, a couple of more passes on the script, and I think this would have been actually a really, really good movie versus a, that was okay. If you want to watch your Vietnam movie, and you want something light and fluffy, and you've done the A-Team to death, and you don't want to get into Apocalypse Now, this will do.
Yeah.
This will do.
Yes, it does.
And now... before the next show starts, let's enjoy an intermission. You'll find our snack bar chock full of good things to eat and drink. Tasty, tempting hot dogs, thirst-quenching soft drinks, fresh, crunchy popcorn, a complete assortment of delicious candy, and a full line of cigarettes. You've plenty of time, so visit the snack bar now. A tasty treat will double your enjoyment of the show. For your convenience, we shall keep you informed of the remaining intermission time.
Alrighty, that wraps it up for The Last Hunter. And more importantly, that puts us in the halfway point between the A's and the Z's, at least as far as the Section 3 list goes. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a week or two off, recharge our batteries, maybe watch something that isn't kung fu and monsters and rape. Although actually, upon thinking about it, that's my life outside of the Video Nasty Project, so strike that. Anyway, so we've got some ideas for some fun episodes we might do, some non-list-centric episodes. We'll see if those come to fruition or not. But in the meantime, you drop us an email, thevideonastyproject@gmail.com. You stay safe, you stay evil, and come back and join us for The Love Butcher. See ya.
Don't smoke. And the only kind of chocolate I eat is white chocolate. Where did you pick up such a rotten and Christian-like social attitude?